we're going to have to move off of denuclearization as being our be-all, end-all goal. And that's very hard for the United States to sell domestically.
North and South Korea meet and make agreements. It's Tuesday, October 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China's plan to win the trade war. Rohingya women bypass men. Australia's telescope to see Earth, predicting heart attacks and confused bees. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North and South Korea have agreed to begin a joint project to modernize and connect their rail and roadways before the end of the year. At a high-level meeting Monday, the two nations agreed to a proposal that will see teams beginning to inspect transportation links. They also agreed to discuss issues related to a North Korean art troupe performing in the South as soon as possible. Furthermore, they agreed to hold Red Cross talks at the North's Mount Kumgang Resort in November related to families separated from the Korean War. Some of the plans appear to violate sanctions imposed by the UN Security Council. They also seem to counter concerns by the Trump administration over what is seen by some as the enthusiasm shown by South Korean President Moon Jae-in in moving closer to North Korea while it still has nuclear weapons. Ken Gause, director of the Advisory Analytics Research Program at the CNA think tank in Washington, tells VOA Asia's Ira Melman that it is time some new strategy should be adopted by the United States.
We are fundamentally misunderstanding where North Korea stands. North Korea has not agreed to unilateral denuclearization, which, if you read the Western media, that seems to be what we believe that North Korea has signed up for. North Korea has signed up for denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. This is a term that North Korea has used dating back to 1954 when they started talking about nuclear peace-free zones in Asia. It does not mean that they have signed up to get rid of their nuclear weapons on the front end of a negotiated process. And I think that this is something that that is causing debate between the United States and South Korea on how best to engage North Korea and get them to move down the path toward eventual denuclearization. The United States believes that this should be done through a pressure campaign that forces North Korea to make substantive progress on unilateral denuclearization up front, before we give them incentives and security guarantees as we go through this process. Whereas South Korea believes, and I think North Korea probably also believes, and I know that China seems to agree to, the idea that this should be part of a peace regime and that denuclearization should be embedded as a confidence-building measures, as are these rail and road networks, and also economic and security guarantees that become a series of confidence-building measures that you work through a phased process that at the back end of the process, eventually you will hope to achieve denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, including denuclearization of North Korea.
With the apparent leaning of the White House, President Trump and his advisors seem to be still demanding that denuclearization take place before any of these sanctions are lifted. And how do you react to that? What should be happening here as far as you're concerned?
Well, I can understand that this would be what the Trump administration wants to say publicly, because this plays well inside the United States, and we're heading into a midterm elections, and the administration needs to look tough on countries such as North Korea. But if you look at it from the North Korean position, that giving in to unilateral denuclearization without having it embedded into some sort of a peace process, in other words, it's denuclearization first, that's basically a zero-sum game where one side wins and the other side loses, which means that North Korea would lose face. So from their point of view, doing unilateral denuclearization with verification that went along with that would be something that they would see as being undermining the legitimacy of the regime. And so I think the United States really needs to, is really stuck in a very difficult situation, because internally, domestically, politically, it makes sense to tout denuclearization as being the be-all, end-all of our North Korea policy. But in order to have traction with North Korea and actually reach some sort of satisfactory result toward eventual denuclearization, we're going to have to move off of denuclearization as being our be-all, end-all goal. And that's very hard for the United States to sell domestically.
You think it is a safe bet to trust North Korea?
Well, I think basically you need to understand what are the things that drive Kim Jong-un. And it's very simple. He has to satisfy two requirements. One is regime survival, and the other is the perpetuation of Kim family rule. Everything else is secondary. So we have to take that into account to understand those are his equities. And if we can come up with a strategy that takes advantage of those equities and also kind of overlaps with our own equities of peace and security and stability in the region, maybe we can find a way forward. And I think we can trust the North Korean regime not to violate those two equities.
Ken Gause, director of the Advisory Analytics Research Program at the CNA think tank here in Washington. Former U.S. National Security Advisor General H.R. McMaster recently said in Seoul that while we all hope that Chairman Kim Jong-un is undergoing a radical change of heart, we must remain alert. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Koreas resume high-level talks as Moon presses for sanction relief. World oil prices help Vietnam expand an already fast-growing economy. Chinese envoy says U.S. charge of election interference is groundless. Rohingya refugees in India rattled after first-ever deportations. Why Taiwan will send tech guru to APEC in November. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are found, as always, on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. President Donald Trump, during an interview aired Sunday night, rejected the view that the United States is in a trade war with China. He preferred to call it a trade skirmish and vowed to win it. His economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, appeared on the Fox News Sunday program.
Those talks have been unsatisfactory. We've made our asks. You can't steal American intellectual property. You can't force technology transfers. Just recently, China issued a regulation where their police can hack into American companies in China in order to steal secrets. That is not good. They have tariffs and non-tariff barriers. You know, the president said time and time again on trade, and I think this works for the security issues as well. We want reciprocity. We want rules by the game to be observed, and right. China has not. Now, the president and President Trump and Xi will probably meet at the G20 in Buenos Aires, Argentina, later in the year. There's plans and discussions and agendas and so forth.
Right.
But the relationship has not been positive lately, and we have to have reciprocity in all these areas, trade, security, military issues. That's what's at stake here. We have to defend right. American interests, as the president has said many, many times.
On that same program, China's U.S. ambassador, Sui Tiankai, said such allegations are groundless and not fair to the Chinese people. He said it would be hard to imagine China's vast population could develop and prosper as it has by stealing and forcing technology transfers rather than relying on its own efforts. He described that as impossible. Steve Hanke, a professor of applied economics at Johns Hopkins University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the United States and China are in a trade war, but China is not like Japan of the 1980s. He said it is a great power that has a plan to counter rising U.S. pressure to change its policies.
And they will push back. They're not going to be pushed around by the United States. That's the bottom line. The United States is trying to muscle them, and they're not going to be muscled. And that's why Kudlow can say, well, things not going very well, because what Kudlow didn't tell you is that China doesn't seem to be a pushover. We can't push them around. You know, we could push a Japanese around and get them to do whatever we wanted to. We pushed them into almost destroying their economy by adopting a policy of an ever-appreciating yen. The yen getting stronger and stronger and stronger, going from 360 yen down to about 80 yen. You know, it caused the economy to implode in Japan. Now, we're very concerned because the Chinese yuan has gone down a little bit compared to the dollar. Well, everything has gone down compared to the dollar. And the Chinese currency has gone down about 6% this year against the dollar. And Secretary Mnuchin is exercised at the U.S. Treasury about that and alluding to the fact that they're manipulating their currency in China and so forth. Well, if China's manipulating its currency, I guess the Europeans are manipulating their currency too.
What about the Chinese stock market? It seems to be falling quite rapidly.
It's a very volatile market. It's a very speculative market. It's a very new market. It's not something that's too surprising to me, point number one in general. And point number two specifically, the Chinese economy is slowing down. The money supply has been growing at a very slow rate relative to its trend rate of growth, and we can anticipate that the Chinese economy is going to be slowing. So finally, that's being factored into the market. In addition to that, I think the trade war has spooked a lot of Chinese speculators, and that lends itself to volatility.
China's central bank governor, Yi Gang, was in Indonesia attending an IMF World Bank meeting, and he said China has plenty of tools that can use to counter the effects of the trade war.
That's what they all say, but the fact is that it won't be a counter so much. It'll be a stonewalling effect. That's the first point. The second point is they do have very precise weapons. They know the voting districts where U.S. voters are being hurt by the U.S. imposed trade war, and they will exploit the vulnerabilities in those particular sectors.
Steve Hanke said Ambassador Sui's references to tensions in the South China Sea and arms sales to Taiwan, along with deepening trade friction, underscores what Vice President Mike Pence alluded to in a major address 2 weeks ago, that the U.S. and China are in a geopolitical war. Happening now in Asia, concerns about debt diplomacy on China's expensive infrastructure mega project, the Belt and Road, have become an increasing source of debate from Asia to Africa and the Middle East. In recent weeks, more than $30 billion in projects have been scrapped, and other loans and investments are under review. Stay up to date with VOA and VOA 60. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The International Organization for Migration reports some Rohingya refugee women in Cox's Bazar have formed a committee that will enable them to present their concerns and needs to UN camp managers directly without having to go through a man. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
More than 100 Rohingya women have formed this first-of-a-kind committee. These women represent only a minuscule fraction of the nearly 1 million refugees who have fled to Cox's Bazar to escape violence and persecution in Myanmar. Nevertheless, the committee is seen as a groundbreaking achievement. In Cox's Bazar, as in most refugee settings, men dominate. Women live in the shadows, while the male members of their families decide on aid, work, and living priorities. The International Organization for Migration says this first-ever all-female committee will flip this scenario around. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says men are not always aware of the issues women consider to be of utmost importance. He says the women in the committee will be able to raise and pursue these issues themselves with UN staff who are in a position to help.
They point out that two of the goals in the near term are to bring concerns of gender violence, improving lighting, for example, around latrines and places that are often risk centers for sexual harassment and abuse, but also to discourage or at least to advise people on what IOM is referring to as forced or early child marriage.
Milner says other issues the women are pursuing include health, water, sanitation, hygiene, protection, and camp management and development. He says the women also think it unfair that men only are able to participate in cash for work programs. They say they too want to work. He says IOM has heard their call and plans to have these cash for work programs equally distributed in the camps between men and women by the end of the year. In the meantime, he says the women have their own ideas for making money and enhancing livelihoods. He says they are planning to make soap and handicrafts at the community center to sell. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, Australia looks down, way down. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, Korean Air Chairman Cho Young-ho has been indicted for embezzlement of more than $17 million, becoming the latest member of his family hit by scandal. He was also the head of the organizing committee for the 2018 Pyeongchang Winter Olympics until stepping down 2 years before the Games. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day as the story develops. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, scientists in Australia want to build a virtual downward-looking telescope that could look at least 300 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface to unlock the country's hidden mineral wealth. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The virtual telescope would bring together much of the information that science has about what lies deep beneath the surface of the Earth. It would collate data from seismic waves generated by earthquakes, information about the electrical conductivity of the subsurface of the planet, samples uncovered by volcanoes, and other computer simulations and experiments. The objective would be to create an accurate three-dimensional image of the Earth's interior, up to a depth of 300 kilometres. The proposal by the Australian Academy of Science is part of a bold 10-year plan that recognises the global shift towards mobile technology, renewable energy sources and electric cars. Researchers say there will likely be huge increases in demand for copper, cobalt, gold, rare earth elements and other special metals that are thought to exist in vast yet hidden reserves in Australia. Professor Sue O'Reilly is from the Australian Academy of Science.
We can map the geology of the interior of the Earth just like we currently map the surface of the Earth by walking over it and physically looking at the rocks that we see. We want to do this in a virtual way, so it's going to be virtual visibility for deep Australia. That will enable us on a global framework to predict where to go and concentrate the exploration efforts so that 90% of the hard, time-consuming and cost-consuming work is done for us using computation and geodynamic modelling.
Australian scientists believe that by 2030, global demand for cobalt will be almost 50 times what it was in 2016. They fear that if Australia doesn't become self-sufficient in this strategic metal, a key component in the lithium-ion batteries that power electronic devices and electric cars, it may face massive price increases and chronic shortages. It's estimated that about 300 companies around the world are now actively searching for fresh deposits of cobalt. The plan championed by the Australian Academy of Science also draws attention to the weakness in geoscience in Australia's education system and the need to foster new generations of scientists. The Academy's objective is to promote science and science education. It is an independent body and was founded in 1954. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia: North and South Korea have held high-level talks within the heavily fortified demilitarized zone. The meeting discussed the implementation agreements made during the recent Pyongyang summit. Experts remain cautious that any real denuclearization progress has been made by North Korea. There's much more today and every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, one of the joys of computer algorithms and machine learning is their ability to extract new data from old technologies. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us doctors at the University of London and Oxford, for instance, have figured out a way to take regular CT heart scans and predict heart problems years in advance.
The hope of this new technology is that it can empower patients to work towards preventing future heart troubles. Here is how it works. Currently, CT heart scans can easily tell patients if they have dangerous narrowing of their arteries, but not much more.
Now, with the new technology, we can take it beyond that. We can say you do not have a significant narrowing in your arteries, but your arteries are inflamed, and a narrowing will be developed 5 years down the line. So maybe you can start preventing measures, maybe you start taking tablets, extra tablets, to avoid this formation of the plaques in the arteries, the disease.
Researchers say being able to identify inflammation around the arteries early on is groundbreaking in the fight to prevent heart attacks.
The holy grail in cardiovascular diagnostics was to find a way to identify inflammation in the heart arteries. Because this is what we have been trying to achieve for the last 50 years. Because if you are able to identify inflammation in the arteries of the heart, then you can say which arteries will develop plaques, disease, and which arteries will cause heart attacks.
Oxford researchers believe their work could identify as many as 30,000 people a year who are at future risk for a heart attack.
In UK, we have 100,000 heart attacks every year. With this new technology, although we have not estimated the exact number of heart attacks that we can prevent, we could potentially identify at least 20 or 30% of these people before they have the heart attack, simply because these are the people who have these scans available as part of clinical care.
Heart disease and stroke together make up the leading cause of death around the world. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Most of us have seen a solar eclipse. When the moon passes between the Earth and the sun, and the moon's shadow makes daytime seem a bit like night, that can affect the behavior of some animals and insects like bees, as we hear in today's Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
On August 21, 2017, a total solar eclipse followed a northwest to southeast path across the United States. A number of researchers from various scientific disciplines used the solar eclipse to conduct experiments. Researchers at the University of Missouri put together a group of citizen scientists, along with elementary students and their teachers, to study how a solar eclipse affects bees. 16 acoustic monitoring stations were placed along the total eclipse path in Oregon, Idaho, and Missouri. The monitoring stations were placed in locations where bees would congregate, such as flower patches. As the total eclipse made its way over each monitoring station, the researchers listened for the sound of bees buzzing, or as they found out, not buzzing. During the periods of totality, the bees took a break from their daily routines. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And you've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. And as always, we're on VOA Asia Facebook. Of course we are. We stream there every day. Like our website, voanews.com. And you can hear us on many great radio stations around Asia, including CCU Radio. That's at National Chung Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And we also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Patrick Daya, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.